when you have invisible injuries, invisible illnesses, being able to keep up is a little bit of a badge of honor, right? But on the other hand, that's a badge of honor in a world of ableism, in a world that doesn't have space for having invisible injuries.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. And I am so excited. We have a person that we haven't had on the show before, you know, but I met her recently. You guys might remember Simone. She was on the show and she said, "You need to meet Dr. Carly Hudson." And I was like, "Absolutely." She sent me her bio and everything. And Simone was all about, "Gosh, you got to meet her." And she and I talked a while ago, and we were just on the same wavelength about so many things. So let me give you a quick introduction to Dr. Carly Hudson. We're going to call her Dr. Carly here in just a moment. But as an infant, she suffered from a devastating and life-threatening illness and was left with what she calls invisible handicaps. They included things like balance disorder and muscle problems, hearing loss, et cetera. And we'll go into deeper detail about that. But today she cares for just thousands of people. She is a chiropractor as well as certified in massage, yoga, and exercise therapy. And she works with people with, I'll call, invisible illnesses, injuries, and chronic pain. And so welcome to the show, Dr. Carly. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Shelley, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to continue our conversation.
Absolutely. And also, I just want to put in here a plug too, because she's also the founder and producer and host of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. So we'll talk about that in a little bit too. One of the things that Simone saw in a connection for us was this idea, you call it, yours was an invisible handicap. Mm-hmm. And I really saw the connection. People with autoimmune, a lot of people will say, "But you look fine," and then make all these assumptions that, why are you, you know, why don't you have the zip and energy of the rest of us types of things? So tell us a little bit about your story and the ways you've been challenged with invisible handicap.
And I see so many overlays between, you know, any chronic disease, really, whether it's autoimmune. Mine came from what amounted to be the traumatic brain injury from having bacterial meningitis. It was just an inflammatory storm that took over my brain and just left me with a lot of things that I had to struggle with that other people couldn't see. And I think that that is something that is becoming more and more part of common conversation, at least if you're a little bit in the know. We're able to have conversations about neurodivergence and mental health issues, which are also individual or invisible. But some of these other pieces like energy and movement disorders, we all, at least I did, I tried to hide them because it was easier than trying to spend the 20 minutes of explaining them. So, which I don't know if you and your listeners can identify with that, but because they can so often get brushed away. So mine started, like you said, I was 7 months old and I had bacterial meningitis and, you know, Western medicine saved my life. I had a 5% chance of survival and here I am. And that is wonderful. I went to PT because at 7 months I was just starting to crawl. And after my illness, I couldn't even hold up my own head. So everything, all of my movement from there was relearned. And then we come to find out that I had a profound hearing loss. At the time, it was in both my ears, and it started to settle down to just being deaf in my left ear. So I got a little bit of my hearing back. And I got to walking again, and everything that my doctors that were taking care of me at the time said was, all right, compensates well.
Compensates well. I take that as a positive, yet I hear that people with autoimmune, and I've been told I compensate well.
Yeah.
That doesn't answer my questions, but go ahead.
I love that you picked up that phrase, because I have a love-hate relationship with that phrase.
I do too.
it was scribbled across the bottom of every one of my medical files. You know, I'm old enough that mine were all paper, and I got my copies, and there it is, compensates well. So, you know, as much as it's legible in doctor writing. And, you know, on the one hand, when you have invisible injuries, invisible illnesses, being able to keep up is a little bit of a badge of honor, right?
It is.
But on the other hand, that's a badge of honor in a world of ableism, in a world that doesn't have space for having invisible injuries. And so compensates well also sticks in my tooth as it's condemning, it's limiting, it's not letting me know the source of my problems or where I can heal, or where maybe I shouldn't have to compensate, but maybe I should be helped or accommodated. And so it is a double-edged sword to carry around that compensates well.
Right. The comma after compensates well, or the other ways of describing that for me were excellent coping skills. Well, thank you. Can we get to the root so maybe I don't have to cope anymore?
Yeah, it's like you've made this easier on me, the provider, by coping well. Let's move on.
Exactly. Back up.
That's not why I'm here.
Exactly. Or the other one, which I get from more of, I'll just say, the general public, is you're so brave.
Yeah.
I never viewed it as bravery, because what's the alternative? I mean, I don't want the alternative, whether it's just curling up in the fetal position and you know, woe is me.
Yeah.
Or giving up in some other form. I'm like, please don't. I mean, I guess you're saying that you wouldn't respond in the same way when you say you're so brave, but don't sell yourself short when you have no other alternative.
Yeah.
Bravery is the only thing you choose.
Well, and I think that kind of phrase, because I get that a lot too. Wow, you do a lot of work. You really, and yeah, it is. Health is a lot of work, guys. We all know this, but to me, that says more about the person delivering that compliment than it does about me. And what I think becomes a superpower of living with invisible injuries, handicaps, chronic disease, is that we don't get to choose between and a little bit better. And if you are a neurotypical, able-bodied individual, it's a very gradual slope into disease. If you are living with any of the conditions that you or I or many of your listeners may experience, it is a sharp precipice of a cliff that you are either taking care of yourself or not getting out of bed for a week or some version thereof. And so when you're faced with that alternative, you get the opportunity. This is how I've started to look at it, because what other way is there? You get the opportunity to learn and instill values of health and self-care and nurturing in a way that is non-negotiable. And I watch my patients and my friends and my colleagues who aren't faced with this precipice really struggle to own what amounts to some very simple things about rest and recovery and hydration and good food, because the consequences aren't as dire for them. And in a way, I've decided it's a superpower, but it is a lot of work. And when people say, my gosh, you're so brave, or look at what you're doing, I think, well, you could do it too. But sometimes it's when your back is against the wall that we really learn the lesson.
Exactly. And often with an autoimmune or similar type of thing, whatever that is, whatever you've been diagnosed with, your back is now consistently against the wall. It's like, I get a little frustrated when people, especially, or, you know, we just passed the holidays here. People mm-hmm. say, oh, but just a bite, just have a bite. And, you know, I know that a bite of whatever that would be based on my particular history could mm-hmm. have me down with a migraine or, you know, in bed for a week. Yeah. Like, these assumptions of somehow, as you had said, my health is negotiable and it is no longer negotiable. Mm-hmm. And when people, I want to encourage people who don't have a condition yet, and I say that kind of carefully mm-hmm. yet, is to take it seriously now before yeah. you get there. Because as I'm unraveling through the help of functional medicine experts, unraveling, I realized that this started when I was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. It didn't become, I'll say, acute until 2014. Mm-hmm. But there had been a slow progression of getting closer and closer to that precipice mm-hmm. until one day you wake up and you've fallen over into that new place.
And there was a phrase that I learned back when I was doing my massage training, is that from the lens of someone with invisible with any kind of handicap, to call, it's not being able-bodied, it's being temporarily able-bodied. Because we never know whether you're creeping up to that precipice, whether there's a bus coming, whether anything. None of us are guaranteed health. None of us are guaranteed the permanence of the body that we are currently in. And so enjoying and nurturing the health that you have at your fingertips, wherever you are on any kind of spectrum, is part of how it's our currency of getting through life, not something that we are promised as a way of being. And when I see people get sick, or I see people get injured, or patients who come in and they're in pain for the first time in their lives, and it is the most crushing experience because they thought, I've never been like this before. I never thought I would be like this before. And that is the hubris of being quote unquote healthy, is that we don't learn to take care of our bodies. We don't learn to take care of ourselves because we take it for granted.
Well, and I think we take it for granted because growing up, I'm thinking of all the times, like maybe that particular thing I was doing, whatever I knew at some level wasn't the healthiest thing to do. And yet I wasn't feeling the immediate direct reflection of that choice. Mm-hmm. But years later, just like growing old, I never thought I'd get older, or I would look at senior citizens and, oh, when I get that age, I won't be like that. Mm-hmm. And yet as you travel down the road, you're like, doggone it.
And it's this idea to think that we need to take care of it at the moment we arrive at that choice point, at being a senior citizen. As is now, I am in the category of old, and I will make sure that my old body is better than somebody else's old body, because this is all about judgment. Instead of thinking, this is the body I have now, and I better take care of it so that it takes care of me. And we're in this together for as long as this journey is. So that's where I think that being up against that precipice, and we know the immediate reaction of, we don't have to guess, you know, if I'm going to eat a piece of that holiday pie that was offered to me, you know, half a dozen times with, oh my goodness, you're so strict. I can't believe that you're turning down this pie again. Stop offering it to me. I'll stop turning it down. And that I'm going to have immediate brain fog and hot flashes and just kind of not be at one with myself for several days, that's very easy to turn that down. But if that pie just kind of makes you feel a little sluggish, well, you know, what's it to you? And in that regard, we all have things that are on sort of a thermostat of health. And I think it's okay if we think about things that give us pleasure, that give us that mind or spirit kind of happiness, joining in a shared meal with family that feels our mind and spirit, but maybe doesn't fill our body in the way that we need. But that nurturing is just as important. It's when we start to look at each of those categories and overdo it on one, overindulge in one area. And yes, maybe that pie makes you feel really good and really connected with your grandma that you made it with. And that's so important. And you're going to eat that pie all the time. Well, now you're overindulging in that mind spirit category and have neglected your body. this is a three-legged stool and all three of those legs need to be about the same length or we're going to topple over one way or another.
Oh my goodness. That's fantastic. Absolutely. Oh, wow. So let's talk a little bit more about, I love the idea of the three-legged stool. Let's talk a little bit about those three legs and be able to dive into that. When I was diagnosed, it was very evident a physical problem. You know, skin rashes, I mean, to the point on my face where people would shy away and things like that. The very things that I had never experienced in life and were very prominent. But I think the others are not as noticeable and we are easier to kind of, oh, I'll deal with it later.
Well, I think that we all have a little bit of our own personal bias as to which leg of the stool we value more. You know, some of us are deeply invested in our spiritual health. And I use term spiritual very, very broadly.
I do too.
Yeah. So just, you know, for any of your listeners, I'm not going to speak dogmatically about any one religion, certainly no one religion being better than the other. But, you know, we all know people where that spiritual, religious, call it what you may, investment.
I even put it into investments, like in just enjoying a walk in nature.
Exactly.
To me, that's spiritual. Yeah, so there's some physical part there and, you know, mental, but, you know, my walks in nature are spiritual to me.
I love that. And they are, I mean, just being out in nature. And what I like about your example, so I'll circle back to it, is that it does bring all three legs together. And so there are ways to engage in each of these areas individually, and there are ways to engage in them collectively. So we all have our bias of which one we're going to predominantly want to invest in. But I think our mistake is thinking that they need to be separate, that we go to our physician for our body, we go to our therapist for our mind, and then we could go to nature or we could go to our clergy or whatever for spirit. And nowhere shall the three meet.
Yes.
I have put these all in different boxes. And, you know, it's good to have your helpers. I mean, my goodness, we need our helpers in all kinds of areas. But believing that our mental health doesn't have anything to do with our physical health, doesn't have anything to do with our spiritual, emotional health, and emotion kind of goes in that one, in both these as well, is dissecting ourselves and really setting us up to piecemeal a problem when really we are a whole being. And we need all three of those pieces, like I said, on equal length of leg on this stool, or we don't have anything to sit on.
Yes. Oh my goodness, I love that. We need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Dr. Carly. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for. That new understanding that will enhance your life and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and I'm here with Dr. Carly Hudson. And oh, I just love her viewpoint about wellness and living with the invisible illnesses, in her case, an invisible handicap brought about by a childhood illness, and how those are our superpowers, and also how we learn to deal with our lives. And when we had to take with that quick commercial break, we were talking about the three-legged stool of mental, emotional, and physical. And Dr. Carly, I wanted to continue on that vein, because one of the things when I started the Autoimmune Hour, it definitely was just physical, you know, like get the top autoimmune doctors on the show talking about, you know, physical rehabilitation or skincare, whatever it was completely physical, until I discovered several amazing people in my world that started talking about how past experience, past traumas, just the way you were taught as a child to approach life could definitely impact your physical health.
Mm-hmm.
Said you need to bring those together, the connections of those. When I made that connection, my health improved so much when I started to say, okay, how are those past things from traumas to childhood, whatever's affecting my health now? So let's talk a little bit about ways to incorporate them all under the same. I know you do a lot of things like massage and during some of my physical therapy opportunities, what's interesting to me is I'll have like an emotional reaction to a particular movement or something. Shoulder will move and all of a sudden I'll get memories of something. And I find that so fascinating. Can we talk a little bit about that idea of how it's all connected?
Absolutely. And I think what I heard you start the question was kind of talking about practicality around it. And what I love in the example that you brought up is that it's not about needing to manufacture those ways of bringing them in, but looking for that experience in whatever one you are, you know, addressing at the moment. So like physical therapy and having that emotion come up from the movement. You know, in massage therapy, we will often say that the issues are in the tissues.
Oh, I love that. The issues are in. I've had that experience.
and they are, for anyone who has had those experiences, they are transformative. We are still learning and researching a great deal about that. But one of the places that we point to is our fascia, which is this interconnected web of tissue that is throughout our body. It works sort of like the fuzz of an orange, where we have that white fuzz, the quercetin of the orange, that covers the whole orange just underneath the skin of the orange. And then if you set the orange in half, it covers the whole half of the orange, and then in quarters, and all the way down to the tiniest little droplet of juice has its own little capsule around it. And we are encapsulated like that very similarly with fascia. Now, fascia is also full of all kinds of receptors that talk to all different areas of our body, where we are in space, but also to our autonomic part of our system, which is the things that just sort of happen automatically, part of that autoimmune area as well. And we have these receptors that feed back into the emotional centers of our body. Beyond that, there's a lot of conjecture about how it works. But what we know from experience is that a site of trauma in our body, or a place where we just kind of shove those emotions down so we don't have to think about them, lands places in our tissue. So my own experience in having meningitis when I was an infant, up until only a few years ago, I didn't own that story. I don't have a conscious memory of being in the hospital, of going to Children's Hospital, being in the emergency room, getting a spinal tap, being held down as a wriggly 7-month-old who didn't want anybody touching her without my mother present because they wouldn't let her in the room because, you know, mothers are hysterical. All of these things were not my story. They were my mom's story. She was the one that was there living the trauma of watching her daughter go through this. It wasn't mine. It was mine after that when all of the handicaps showed up. And I kept coming up against a wall of healing. I couldn't get better than where I was at that moment. And I didn't think anything of it at the time, to be perfectly honest. And then I went and received myofascial therapy. And I went in because other parts of me hurt. But she immediately put her hand right on the small of my back where I had received my spinal tap. And I know that that's where I received my spinal tap because I still had an emotional memory. Anytime anyone mentioned spinal tap throughout my whole life, I felt a pang right there in my lumbar spine.
Wow.
And this was great because this was during the era of "This is Spinal Tap." Everybody was quoting that movie and just, oh, dear.
Trigger after trigger.
Trigger after trigger. And from there, I had this felt memory of just unwinding in that moment from that trauma, that early trauma of my little body, you know, being saved, but being wrapped with fever and then being forced into positions and having a needle stabbed into my back, which was all the things that saved my life, but in the moment was very traumatic. And I had this felt memory of seeing the bright lights and seeing fuzzy bodies because at 7 months old, you can't see that far. It's not like I saw things I wasn't, you know, had the distance to see. And my whole body started to unwind. So it was physical. My body unwound from that trauma. It was emotional and it was mental because after the fact, I had to sit down and process what I had separated out of my life and said wasn't mine. I was the kid in the emergency room. How is that not my story? And from there, my whole body started to change. And the direction that my healing went in the next year and a half from that was exponential, bringing all of that together. Sometimes we just need to sit with that opportunity of emotion that bubbles to the surface. If you're going for a walk in nature, if you're doing PT, if you are about to receive a treatment and you're feeling things coming up, we don't have to name them. We don't have to give them a story, but denying them a presence in our healing journey in our life stifles the way our whole body processes, which is a mental, emotional, and physical experience.
Thank you for sharing that story. What a profound understanding of how healing works. I appreciate that. And I brought up at a lesser degree, what I'll say, different kinds of traumas. Mm-hmm. And that shoulder I was referring to, it was interesting. I had been complaining about the shoulder for a while, and also in my personal life, mm-hmm. undergoing some different things that I was dealing with, important things that I was dealing with. And I remember the therapist at the time said to me, just sort of jokingly, offhandedly, said, "Well, if you take the knife out of your shoulder, you'd be fine." Now, at the moment, I kind of giggled too, you know, that's funny, right? But then within just a very short matter of seconds, the profoundness of that happened. It's like, oh, wow, she's right. You know,
funny because it's true.
And I was thinking about these ideas of where you where someone would mention, oh, this or that person or whatever is a pain in my neck or a pain in my rear end or, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who years ago kept injuring parts, either her ankles, her feet, her knees. It just seemed perpetual, like, what's going on? And yet when you talked with her, she would talk about how her life was out of balance. And I kept thinking, oh my goodness, I wonder how is that related to these continual injuries to, you know, sort of the balance mechanisms or two legs. And I just happened to mention in passing, gee, that's, you know, interesting. And I told her my story about the knife in my back. And it's interesting. I talked to her recently. I sort of lost touch during this pandemic. And I talked to her recently. She said that was so helpful that her feet and her ankles and knees are healing and she's hiking every day. And I was like, mm-hmm. isn't that so interesting? But it when you think about it, you think it's there's something supernatural about it, but then you go, no, it makes perfect sense that they're all connected.
Yeah. And we could boil this down into such like scientific detail about if the story you're telling yourself is that you don't know where you are in space and my life is unbalanced. You know, that's a story we're imagining in our head, but science has shown us that our brain doesn't know if we're imagining something or experiencing something. You know, that's why reading can increase our empathy, because we're experiencing life through another lens, but it's all imaginary. And so if I'm imagining, I'm so off balance, I don't know where I am, then my body is going, oh, so do you want me to put my foot like here, here? I don't know, because I'm off balance. And that translates into very physical ailments. You know, that's it. It's a really oversimplified version of that. But the truth is that our body behaves the way we think and the way we feel. And the way we feel and the way we think is intimately tied to how our body behaves. We cannot separate them out into these different categories the way we have for so many years.
And I think that's important in helping and choosing our medical team, who also has an understanding and not just treating a symptom or anything like that. I kind of have this issue early in my recovery. Western medicine saved my life, and I admire that. But also, though, at what point I was starting to say that some of the interventions were causing new issues that were equally disturbing or disrupting as the issue that I had been dealing with. And how, you know, it's like, okay, I'd like to talk about this. Like, it wasn't about replacement, it's about refurbishment and renewal and releasing and not replacing one issue with a new issue. I find that fascinating about the sometimes the reluctance to help someone get to the root cause.
Mm-hmm. I love refurbish. I will start using that word. I talk a lot about increasing our resiliency. You know, when we do things that are symptom management, and I'll put the caveat here again, sometimes our symptoms are so outrageous that we need to manage them to be able to have any bandwidth to do anything else.
Oh yeah. I'm not arguing. I didn't need that symptom management. I just, once it was managed, it was like, okay, now I'm dealing with a whole new set of problems.
Exactly. After we do that, what's next? What can we do? Because managing that symptom didn't refurbish us at all. It didn't increase our body's resilience to handle the stress of life, the incoming processing of life. It just took away an annoying thing and perhaps replaced it with other annoying things. Right. And we call these side effects, but that's a very euphemistic way of saying other expected things from this medication. Because we know, when we put a medication into our body and it's meant to attach to a certain receptor, well, the body is very frugal. We have that same kind of receptor on all kinds of different systems within our body. So it's going to have a positive effect on the system that we're having a problem with. And it's going to have some other effect on all the other systems, because it's going to go to that receptor no matter where it is. So they are just effects. That is just the effect of taking something that engages with that receptor. So we run out of tools pretty quickly, because now we have to play receptor whack-a-mole. But when we can take that bandwidth and say, what can I do to make my body stronger? And in that category, at its root, there's nothing new under the sun. The things we do to make our body stronger is take care of it. And the way we take care of it might have to get very specific. It might have to get a little tedious. But it is things like rest, recovery, sleep, hydration, movement, nutritious food, not food-like substances, being in positive community, and expressing and feeling our emotions, from the soul-racking sob to laughing so hard you cry. These are all the things that bring health into our body. And in some way, in some regard, we need more of it. And sometimes we need help getting rid of processing things that have built up, toxins and whatnot. But it's these channels that make us stronger.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Amazing. Let's choose one of these channels and run down a rabbit hole with it. You had said like nutrition and hydration to me are two of the things that I can point to. Was once I dove into that head first and gave up my emotional attachment to certain foods or food-like substances. I love that. I'll say they were food-like substances. I had a profound change in my health there as well. But it was, as you said, it was a multi-layered approach. I realized that I did not physically need those food-like substances, although it felt like I needed them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have tips on kind of this felt like I needed it.
Absolutely. And I just have to put a little like throwback asterisk. I forgot one thing, and that is breath and breathing. So I want to add that to the list that I rattled off before, but to focus on the feeling like you need the food-like substances. I think that we have oversimplified and then overcomplicated. It's that weird like dichotomous thing where it's too complicated and too simple at the same time. Our relationship to diet culture, food, it's turned into this giant mismatch of nonsense at some point. You know, we take weight to be our major symptom of change on any of these categories, which weight in and of itself is immaterial. It's the inflammation that adds weight to your body. It is the way that your body is malnourished and hoards fat, which is energy for a later date when it hopes, because it never gets real food. Symptom becomes a weight, or weight becomes a symptom of these things. And we've put too much focus on that because that's not actually about health. Also, if food were just as simple as what I put in my body, then nobody would struggle with changing it. But as you said, we feel like we need these foods, these food-like substances, because we have an emotional attachment to them, or we have a deep baked-in cultural assumption. You know, I grew up at the tail end of the low fat, fat is evil of the 1990s, and we're replacing it with all the low fat food, which we know is all sugar and terrible for us now. But, you know, I treat patients that have been made so afraid of fat from their formative years in the 80s and 90s that they cannot fathom switching over to a high fat diet, even if that's what their body needs. It is a complicated web. And to some degree, I always feel that if we can just acknowledge that and acknowledge that for ourselves, what are our cultural givens about food? What are our personal assumptions about food? Then we can start to actually look at the problem we're trying to solve. Because the problem we're trying to solve runs so much deeper, because again, mind, body, spirit, all connected, here we go again. It runs so much deeper than just what we want to put in our body, but what our body feels about what we put in it. So
I was thinking when you said that, and I had mentioned the food-like substances and how I feel, I knew it was bad one time when I just took a particular can out of a refrigerator and was holding it and I felt better. And I'm like, okay, this is not nourishment. This is not about nourishment when you feel better. Just knowing that you're reaching for this substance, you have it in your hand and all of a sudden you start to feel better. I'm like, okay, put it down, walk away.
But see, having that awareness actually gives you a tool, because you know you didn't need to drink it. You felt better. And so if we can have a real conversation with ourselves and a real awareness of what we're doing, you know, we can know, like, I'm not always hungry, but I deal with blood sugar crashes because I don't actually often feel symptoms of hunger. It's part of some issues I have with my limbic system. So I'm always afraid that I am going to crash. One way to handle that would be to eat constantly. Then I'll never have an issue with not being fueled.
Well, we'd bring up other issues, but yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. Another way to handle that is to have the thing with me. So I always carry a very, very shelf stable protein bar in my purse. And knowing that I have that takes away that fear or that discomfort of thinking that I'm going to have some kind of sugar crash or problem later on. Now, I never really end up eating that because, as it turns out, I live in a well-industrialized area where there is food around me constantly. And if I do end up needing to get food, I can go and get it. I mean, I'm in that privileged space. But just like you can pick up that can of whatever it was and know that you're feeling better, I can carry around that protein bar and know that I don't have to worry. We both just took care of an emotional need that we had attached to food. Yeah. Versus addressing eating real food on a regular basis, drinking water and things that keep you hydrated. That's how we care for our body. In essence, we had two separate issues.
Yeah. And then I think that's what's fascinating, to spend the time. And I like in mine, it was an immediate awareness and then a learning process to keep putting like, no, yeah. replace that with something healthier. Yeah. You know, you're fine. Mm-hmm. And going through the emotional process of the release. And in yours, I mean, there's an emotional component to that about the safety. However, mm-hmm. Definitely a way to mitigate any possible negative outcomes is really important when we're mm-hmm. dealing with, especially when I say invisible illness, allergy, anything like that, mm-hmm. where if something did happen, it's not, well, I'll say easily recognized by emergency personnel. And so there's something yeah. nice to know about just emotionally, mentally. Okay, I have a binky yeah. in the shape yeah. of a protein bar.
Because we have to take care of ourselves very often. Sometimes, you know, with my condition, when I do, I call it a crash. When I do crash, I am not able to speak well. I'm not able to explain myself well. I struggle to grasp for words. I have short-term memory loss. I'm not a good advocate for myself. And so I prepare my backpack to be a good advocate for me later when I need it. You know, I have what I need there. At least past Carly was thinking about what I was going to need. But what I like that you brought up with your can and kind of having that awareness is that you alluded to the fact that it wasn't a one-time thing. You over time kept setting it down. You yes. have to. And we all
it was
do.
A process.
Yes. And in health, particularly when we come from a world of silver bullets and take this medication, your symptoms gone, light switch, we expect everything to follow that light switch. And there is no light switch solution here. Someone I interviewed called it a microwave solution, which I really love. We're doing slow cooker, we're doing stovetop here. That it takes time. If you are actually going to change your behavior, change the way your brain engages with the world, change the health of your body, whether it's fueling or hydrating or doing something different to bring down a marker like blood pressure or glucose levels or anything like this, it takes time. It takes being slow and deliberate and making the same choice over and over again until you don't consciously have to make that choice anymore.
And I had a mentor, this was about, I'll say, not so much this type of change, but it was a business related issue. But I see parallels when I get mentored or coached or just podcast with people, whatever, I can see parallels. And I remember him talking about Trump wanting to do a specific business change. Mm-hmm. And he said, the way you know you're succeeding is when the time between the need and the recognition of what you just did gets closer and closer. He says, you know, you're making progress when all of a sudden the event happens and you intervene appropriately at that time. So mm-hmm. when you're just learning, and I can see myself putting the can down, holding the can, et cetera, that time between the decision of put it down, Sharon, got closer and closer to the point where then it was extinguished and no longer a problem.
Absolutely. And I love that parallel. It's such a great analogy for it. And sometimes we need helpers in that way because we don't know. And that's where we turn to healthcare providers that are hopefully helping us work towards a root cause. And they're going to be the one in their little voice. I get told this a lot by my patients. You're just that little voice on my shoulder of telling me, you know, put down the can. And then eventually I got closer to my goal. And it's not your voice, it's my voice. And then I walk by the fridge and I don't even pick up the can. And then, and then, and then.
And then the can's not even in my fridge anymore.
Exactly. And we need to have that gentleness with us with learning, particularly when we are what I call peeling the onion of health, where you get rid of one symptom, you're getting that resilience, you're refurbishing, and it brings up another one. And now you have to learn to grapple with this one. You're doing the same process all over again. What's the need? What's the intervention? What do I need to learn to do differently? Who's my helper so that I make it to the goal of doing it differently? And we just do that over and over and over again through any number layer of health, any number layer of challenges from now until the end. And it becomes a simple equation done deliberately towards health or towards disease, because either way, we're doing it.
Hopefully before you get too involved in one of the avenues, you're going to take time to reflect and go, is this the road I want to be on?
Exactly.
And I think doing away with that wishful thinking or magical thinking that we're looking out at other elderly family members or friends and community at large going, oh, when I get there, I'm not going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to somebody recently and we were commenting about just age in general, about the ideas of, oh, when I was 20, the 40-year-old seemed really old to me. And, you know, mm-hmm. the closer I got to 40, maybe it was like the 60-year-old seemed really old to me. And this being mindful of, is that wishful thinking? Is that this magical thinking going on?
Yeah, we can always, and our brain has a tendency to do this. We want to other. When there is something that is not appealing to us personally, we other it. We put it in a different category. Oh, that's not me. They're old. That's not me. They had XYZ health condition. That's not me. They made these choices. When in reality, it constantly comes back to kind of what we were talking about at the beginning. We are all temporarily in whatever state we are in, temporarily able-bodied, temporarily not, temporarily this healthy, better or worse. And it's our choices in this moment and the choices that we make every single day that is going to choose that trajectory for us, not this magical wishful thinking, as you put, that we won't ever end up in that category. Because we just might.
Yes, or a different one, but either way. Well, Dr. Carly, this has been awesome. We're just down to the last couple of minutes. Please share with us some final thoughts. And I know you have a book coming out at the end of the year, but I do want to invite you back because I am so excited to be able to read your book and I want to promote it now so everybody can kind of put that on the list for end of year. But share with us some final thoughts and how we can learn more about you.
Thank you. My brain went five different places at once. So the book that's coming out at the end of the year is called Fortunately, Unfortunately. And that is a little bit of what my final thought is it's about mindset and the perspective that we take towards health and wellness in any category that we look at. We can look at these unfortunate things that happen around us and find the fortunately around them, find the lessons and find ways out to be stronger and more resilient. Now, I've interviewed a lot of people on my podcast. You mentioned Healing Ground Movement. And while we wouldn't wish any of the things that we have gone through onto other people, it has been the experience of learning to deal with them, overcome being so brave and strong and determined that has taught us the lessons of being who we are now. And so if we can flip that script a little bit and start looking at what lessons and resiliency lie in overcoming what's in front of us, no matter what it is, we can be a stronger person tomorrow and the next day and thereafter.
Beautiful. And your website, Dr. Carly.
So my website is healinggroundmovement.com. And if you happen to be a Coloradan like myself, I am also a chiropractor in South Denver. And it's pretty similar, healinggroundchiropracticcare.com as well.
Fantastic. And our podcast is the Healing Ground Movement podcast as well. And it's on all the major places. You know, you can find it anywhere that you listen to your podcast called Healing Ground Movement podcast. So thank you, Dr. Carly, for sharing your wisdom with us. It is awesome. When someone's been through it, it's so encouraging. And I just love it when we're able to shine a light on places to like, oh, maybe you want to peek over here or look over there. And you certainly did that for us today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, be sure and get out there and have a few adventures. All things considered, I'll put in air quotes nowadays. But nothing like getting some walks in nature and some nice deep breathing going on to refresh our body, mind, and soul. So everyone, go find some adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.